It's fun. It's wild. It's Dad's Gone Crypto.
Welcome everybody to Dad's Gone Crypto. Another week, another episode. And guess who we have on the show? We've got Michael Holdman and Jacob Holdman. And they're going to be sharing some cool updates on what's happening with Brasaga, the Brasaga coin and their development. So we're very, very excited. Welcome, guys, to the show.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Sean. Great to be on.
Great to have you guys.
Awesome. And you guys also know that CryptoDad Ryan's with us as well, and CryptoDad Sean. And the first question I'd like to ask you guys, all right, on your website, it's big and it's bold. It says, we are developing or building the world's most advanced layer one blockchain. All right, that's a bold statement, right? So can you guys tell us, you know, like everyone's building the best blockchain, all right, but what makes yours different and, you know, how is it going to change this landscape?
Jake, you want to take that or should I?
Yeah, I can take it. So
okay, because I'll go technical.
to keep it kind of 9,000 foot view, we really got into this industry to solve the problem of scale and blockchain. We started back in 2018 originally with the idea of using a blockchain for an Internet of Things and smart city message bus so that we could decentralize and let people profit off of their data. However, we quickly found out that the layer ones we had out there, ETH, Solana, Avalanche, you know, those first generation of layer ones, none of them would reach the scale of what we had with our IoT and smart city message server. And so that kind of set us on the path that we are today was, how do we actually solve for scale? And the biggest thing about Brasaga compared to what we call smart contract platforms is we took a look at the problem from a completely different lens. You know, we took a 180 degree turn around the problem and tried to solve it that way. And so what we get is a completely novel idea, moving away from the smart contract framework, which, you know, in the industry is a little kind of extreme. You know, smart contracts have become some sort of standard across a lot of the industry. Little do we know that it's actually the smart contracts and how they kind of silo the data is the actual reason that blockchains can't scale. So in our approach, our approach is almost as if we took Windows and put it on the blockchain. We built out a completely native operating system that uses object-oriented programming that allows us to run exactly how a multi-core CPU runs, like your laptop or your desktop. You know, you have multiple cores in your hardware that are running processes at the same time so that it's faster. That's exactly what we've done. And what the architecture approach has allowed us to do is run transactions in shards in parallel so that we don't run into the problem of what in computer science is known as state explosion. You know, as right now, the layer ones, very, very few users and very, very little data that they need to actually, that they're scaling right now. You know, get to an enterprise is on top of a blockchain. A lot of these blockchains are going to fall over because of this, what we call the state explosion problem. And so that's exactly what we are solving for. And that's exactly what our CTO, David Bieberman, has created. He's created a layer one blockchain that is no longer bound by the limits of smart contracts. Now it's only bound by how much internet bandwidth can we get for an internet server. You know, we are still limited in a lot of the hardware aspects of how fast data can actually travel through the fiber optics in the ground around the world. But we have accounted for the state explosion so that once we get to a level where there is, you know, huge, huge, huge amounts of data, our platform will be able to actually handle it. And, you know, we won't have the hiccups and the troubles that a lot of layer one chains have nowadays.
Well, that's excellent. So that's solving a massive problem for crypto, for blockchain. How does that translate to some real world problems out there? What's that going to solve for the general public, let's say?
I'll kind of take that one, because we're actually working on something. I can't make an announcement on what group it is, but we just submitted a document that is going to be used in order to form what's called a Tiger Team. Myself and my co-founder, David Bieberman, both have been involved in standards bodies for the past couple decades. Standards bodies are like the ISO. When you go around and you see billboards that say ISO 9001 certified or whatever the number is, that means that there's an international standard that's been agreed upon industry-wide across all competitors in order to solve a solution that plagues the entire industry, not just their own implementation of it. So the Tiger Team is going to it's going to take our code, and we're going to create use case and put together design docs for different industries. This specific one has, you know, a dozen different industries that they have as working groups at work. And it's like healthcare, supply chain, manufacturing, fintech, and others, right? So the idea is to go ahead, now that we've got this out there, and now that the code is, I mean, we're within, you know, you say days and it's weeks, you say weeks and it's months. So I'll say days, and then I'm hoping weeks that we're running. now that we're that close, we can actually start to work with the large enterprises. Remember, this project isn't about the current 4% of the world population that has something in crypto, right? Whether it's an NFT or a memcoin or a coin or something. This is for that other 96% of the world, right? It's like, and I have had conversations lately with some investors, and the issue is that they don't see new capital coming in, new liquidity coming into this market right now. And it's because I think we've capped out on what we can offer. And that's really where we're looking for. So how do we advance industry with a very, very, with an approach that it kind of tears down what those walls are? Decentralizing industry is going to be a very difficult thing. However, if we can get to a point where we have a standard that everybody can agree to. You can have all your proprietary things. You can do all that you want, being a corporation and such like that. But you're all utilizing the same underlying approach to solve that problem. So guess what? You'll solve the problem if you find an approach that everybody uses. You know, this goes back to, I don't know if you guys remember Bernie Ebers and WorldCom and MCI and the 40 different networks that WorldCom bought over the time. And this was just in telecommunications, right? This was for long distance and moving data. This is, you know, the early parts of the internet in the 90s and such. And they could never make any of it work together. All of those 40 different telecommunications companies had different equipment that just did not speak to each other. So it was very difficult in order to get that to happen. And that's really what our focus is on, is how do we get to industry standards so now we can move the industry forward? And a standard does not mean it's proprietary. A standard means that it's just everybody agrees to work like this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that's really what this focus is here and where we're going, right? It's now to bring in that other 96%, regardless of what the industry is, because we don't care.
So if it sounds to me like, so I think traditionally people, when they get into crypto, is like, all right, let me buy a coin. Cool. You got a token or a coin. Let me buy an NFT. Great. Got an NFT. Let me buy into this project and let it go up and down. And you're seeing fluctuations. Or I got an NFT that gives me access to a music festival. Cool. Right. But I think the way our community need to see what Prasaga is doing is perhaps seeing it as creating a foundation or a landscape for people to build on, all right, that is ISO ready to some degree in the future, or a standard that people can build to that will solve real world problems like automotive industries, mm-hmm. pharmaceuticals, just tracking medication from the source, from the plant that it was ethically farmed to, you know, the batch, to the how it was produced, to the consumer or to the chemist, and then the chemist to the consumer. Then all that along the way can be tracked, right? So that's a problem that it's a real world problem at the moment because of the drug abuse and pharmacists just giving out chemicals left, right, and center. So it's a real world, you know, solution, right?
Look, absolutely. And just another area that we're going to real quick is, let's just talk about ticketing for sport, for entertainment, for concerts and such. And the incredible markups that are happening because the brokers come in with a bunch of bots and buy all the tickets immediately off of Ticketmaster or something. And now they're mm-hmm. selling them for, what was it? They went up to $90,000 for Taylor Swift. I mean, we are engaged with some people in the music industry that are looking at how can we solve some of these things, right? How can we protect the artists and the consumer rather than just protect the enterprise that's actually doing the ticketing, right? And so get to a platform where, yeah, here, you can have the ticket, but guess what? No, you can't mark it. The blockchain won't let you mark it up like that, right? Yeah. If you're selling secondary and such. So yeah, you're absolutely correct, but this is, and it's the breadth of industry that once you understand the architecture, once developers start to understand the architecture, and then once the consumer starts to see the ease of use without knowing it's a blockchain, which is the biggest focus here, is you do not know what you're on. It doesn't matter. It's just like when you got your first app for B of A or Wells Fargo or something, it's on your phone. You didn't know you were using the internet. You didn't care that you were using the internet. I just know that I can go ahead and put some data in and it's going to do what I tell it to do.
Yeah. Right. I think, Michael, you also mentioned that one of the biggest problems to solve is scalability, right? People take for granted that, oh, we just add more machines, we just do a little bit more, employ more people, yada, yada. But if anybody wants to see how things are stress test, wait for a bull market, because even Ethereum, just the gas prices become stupid. It gets clogged. The transactions are slow. And this is the golden child, right? Well, Bitcoin's the golden child, maybe the second best child. So there's a lot of problems facing it, and they're trying to solve it as technology goes on. That leads me to the next question, is that you guys have been building for quite some time, right? And solving the problem, you know, of fine tuning those skill sets and that. Has the technology improved in such a way in this day and age that maybe your technology is, I wouldn't say redundant, but old technology, or is it still, you believe, still the best technology out there?
So there's certain things that can't be changed, and they're known as laws. Computer law is a big thing, right? Mm. So it doesn't matter how advanced the technology gets. There's Amdahl's law will always be in place. And that is a mathematical equation that lets you understand exactly where in a mainframe computer I can process data in parallel and where that data serializes. And that's exactly what this is. So the technologies and such within hardware and everything, yes, that's advancing. But is the TCP/IP ever going to have a better TCP/IP? No. TCP/IP addresses a server, and it sets up a link between two servers that lets you know if they're both still online talking to each other, mm-hmm. right? And so the internet runs on TCP/IP. And what we're talking about here, the things that we have been looking at, or the approaches that we've taken, are using the underlying protocols and approaches that allow the internet to scale. And real quick, what I'll give as an example, just so everybody understands, the grocery store is probably the best way to understand what this scaling is and what we're doing. So today, in today's smart contract world, you're at a grocery store and you want to check out, and you have beef in your cart. Well, lane one is beef. The cash register on lane one is a smart contract for beef. Lane two is chicken. Lane three is squid. Lane four is pork. Lane five, so on and so forth. Up until recently, you could only be in lane one to purchase that beef, or you had to be on that smart contract, on that register. Lately, there have been Multiverse X and Near and others that have started to execute the shard the execution of the data. So that means that, okay, I have beef. I'm in lane one. This is really long. I can go over to lane three and run the beef. But in order to get receipt, I still have to go back to lane one. Lane three can't give me the receipt. It can only execute that transaction. It can't finalize it. You still have to go back to the lane that you're subscribed to. That's what we solved for. I don't care what your product is. You can go on any lane. And to the point of when you see this, the increase in demand, that's one of the things that we do have, that our capability is to dynamically add more shards and in reverse take away shards as the velocity of transaction increases and decreases in the normal ebbs and flows of a global economy. And so that then allows us to your point, Sean, about the disruption in transaction fees. If we have an average transaction queue, well, then that should create an average transaction fee, because if I know, regardless, it's going to take between 15 and 30 seconds for this transaction to finalize. The total, not transaction per second, how many seconds per transaction is it going to take me to be able to do that? Now, is that fast enough for retail point of sale? Probably not. We're too impatient as a race right now, especially here in Western. Maybe over in Southeast Asia and such, they have a little more patience and everything. There's still is still in them, but here we're a little more aggressive on time. Thanks to email, right? And IMs. All of a sudden, there's no time for anything. But that's really where it comes to, regardless of how it goes up or down. So we're going to set the minimum at a quarter of a penny. Now, you can, of course, if you want to try to get up in the queue faster or get your transaction put through in faster, then you can probably bid that up like you do in Ethereum. It's all based on market, right? We're not here to determine. Everybody's saying the market is going to drive demand for price, for speed and everything. But it will keep it level as much as we can. When there are jumps in it, we can add the resources, more resources in order to pull that down back to the average that we're shooting for. And the reason I say 15 to 30 seconds on average for your transaction, we're going to do 15 second blocks, but depending on when your transaction gets into the queue and looked at, it could come in the next block, which would be then 30 seconds total.
Okay. So, all right. So Prasaga is it's a very different type of blockchain from what I'm hearing here. So will Prasaga be able to play nicely with other blockchains, from an integration point of view?
Jake?
Yeah, so that is actually, that's what this industry is about. It's about the community, but also about the interoperability. I mean, that's why we got into it in the first place, was to be able to create interoperability between devices. And that is something that we are building on. We will have the capabilities to have an object in our system that represents an ERC-20 smart contract. So we are right now kind of working on and looking at bridges and how we're going to go about, connecting to other ecosystems. There's a lot of really great companies coming out right now, that are doing more than just kind of monetary bridging. A lot of companies are out there trying to figure out how you can do, messages cross-chain so that you can actually get some more data. So that is something that we, this industry is about interoperability. If you're kind of coming in as we're the only ones that are right, you're going to lose just because of how the industry is and the world that we are trying to build with this industry. So we definitely are taking the steps to make sure that we can kind of connect and interoperate with other chains as well.
Great.
Guys, as of like 2020, you know, there were about 8.2 million Python developers, right? And I think part of the growth of Prosago lies in that simple code that you guys decided to build on, right? And how does it play a role? Why did you choose it? Was it just because it was the easiest and most available, or did it solve some issues that you guys were experiencing in the early stages of your conceptual design?
So when it comes to Python, there's a couple of reasons it was chosen. First of all, it's because 85% of the world's developers claim it to be their main language. Okay, so sounds kind of reasonable to go out and use a language that everybody already knows, right? There is some challenge to learning Saga Python, and it's just because of the way that you reference classes. Instead of going to Python classes, you go to the ones in our class tree. But we don't have to get into that. The reason that technically it was chosen is because Python is a first-class programming language. So it's got this meta class layer, this dynamic class layer that all Python apps can use, that draw from that layer and then create their own libraries and stuff out of that. So it was just the easiest language to translate over to a first class object model. And that was the whole reason. So the two are the number one and programming language. And the second one was because it already has it already acts as a dynamic layer. And Dave likes it better than Java in this instance, or some of the other programming languages that are out there. I mean, Dave has programmed in over 60 programming languages. He wrote 3 programming languages. One of them was the forebearer to Python, called TLC. Or TCL.
And so another thing, you know, a lot of people bring up, but the point that, hey, like Python is not a super secure programming language, you know, and it's designed to be that way, that you can do a lot with it. One of the things that Dave has actually done is hardened Python. So he has made it a much more secure programming language for Saga Python, which, to be fair, has, you know, is something that the Python community might not be the biggest fan of. But this is, you know, it's like art. This is our own interpretation of it. And it now gives people the option of having a more secure Python programming kind of interface that happens now on the blockchain.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
And I think one thing to really remember is that all ML is basically programmed in Python. So machine language, the machine learning is already programmed in it. So why not? Again, this is all about data. It's all about indexing. It's all about figuring out where things are, right? So why not use the language that all of those people that are looking for solutions potentially to help with their big data problems, help with their security of data and everything like that. Just don't make it wall.
Could I summarize the hard coding Python, right, to maybe like an Apple iOS system? So, you know, in the early stages, you can do a lot with it. Now you guys have kind of locked it down a little bit to allow more security on it. Is that what I'm understanding?
So what it specifically is in right now, the way that we hardened, or what we're doing to harden Saga Python, is basically just not allowing any executables or any Python classes. So just like on an application that opens up on a laptop, it opens up and it calls the code that it needs, but no other code, right?
Okay.
And puts it in. Well, we kind of did that with Python. So instead of when the dApp or app, whatever you want to call it, right, the class opens, it's going to utilize just the Python classes that are necessary for it to run. But then instead of continually calling to the Python classes, which is basically just a library that you downloads and stores locally, and then you run it from there. Instead of that, everything from then on is just a class from the actual blockchain itself. So you just, you can, you, it, it works fully just like Python, and everything to everybody, but you're just referencing and utilizing the classes in that global class tree instead of utilizing the individual Python classes. And it's there in order to stop people from injecting malicious code to the best of our abilities. Will it ever be 100%? No, that's the thing to it, right? So, but we look to mitigate as much as possible all of those barriers, all those vectors that you can potentially get into.
Okay, excellent. So, getting a little off the technical side, what any major updates going on with the project that you can share with the community? Like, what where you guys are at? What's happening?
Jake?
Yeah. So, you know, right now it's really we're continuing to build. We're getting to those final stages. Soon we should have essentially the private version of a permission chain. So we will actually have a web browser viewer that will be reading all the data and info from the blockchain and start to be able to giving us some metrics. You know, what's the transactions per second, the blocks per minute? What are the kind of how many blocks are each individual node winning? What's things like that? And so, you know, this will be kind of the first time that we're able to really show the community and give them a nice UI UX as well to see and prove all the things that we've been saying is coming true, especially on the scale side of things. Also with this step, you know, we can actually start, developers can really start building out their classes. So they can start doing the work that needs to be done before they actually go in and start doing full development. Now they can start to go in, you know, we're going to need foundational classes for the chain. Things like class DeFi. Class DeFi is now just a class of code that any DeFi project in the world wants to use can come on, use that code, and then modify it, make subclasses of what they want to do. Say they want to focus on derivatives. Say they want to kind of take the roll bit route and do kind of a gambling aspect. Those can now be all coded in and developed underneath whatever the main class is. So right now, you know, we're really looking to start getting those foundational classes built out so that by the time we get to public testnet, that the applications and the dApps that we're working with can start to run their testnet environments. And then by mainnet, you know, we have some of those pieces there that will make the development very easy, you know. People will be coming in. They're not going to be having to write whole in the old world smart contracts. Now they come in. They have an entire class of code that they can browse through, find if they have one that they would is good for them and they can use, or they can go and make their own, you know, and create that new foundational class. So we're really getting to the point where, you know, bringing on the ecosystem and getting the ecosystem partners a part of it. You know, we're working on building out that bridge. We're working on putting a DEX on Saga chain, getting some DeFi protocols. We have about 7 to 8 different dApps that are building already that are very non-traditional to the crypto space. You know, we have 2 different companies that are working in the pet adoption space to create kind of an all-in-one platform where, you know, you see exactly where that pet has been from, you know, the shelter it came through. You have all the vet records. You have all the adoption records tied to an NFT of your dog, as well as being able to do, you know, even getting to peer-to-peer adoptions and things like that. We have another company that's working in the regulated medical device space. They're going to put their supply chain for creating the devices on Saga chain, as well as the actual data network of their devices, you know, really help to create that seamless kind of network of devices. And that's another part, you know, once we get finished with the chain and stuff like that, the IoT and smart city message bus, we still have about 3 million lines of code. That's really the visualization part of the blockchain. You know, that's going to be able to show, you know, here is your device. Here's all the data coming from your device. here's how much you can make for the data off your device. You know, we also have another company that's doing a data marketplace where you can actually rent or lease your data instead of just selling it for a one-time profit or revenue stream. So yeah, right now, you know, we're getting to the point where we're very close to showing the world what we have. And now it's really bringing on the rest of the community and really getting this built up so that when we list, we have that community underneath to really prop us up and support us. So that's kind of, you know, where we are, in terms of listing. You know, we're waiting right now for the tech to get finished. But we're looking for, you know, around the halving in order to list the coin. We want to make sure that we have the right timing and we don't get left behind in the bull run as well. So, you know, that's really kind of where we are and what we're doing. We're continuing to look for ecosystem partners. You know, any project that is looking for a new chain to build on or chain agnostic, we have a very different approach. And also, you know, starting to go after those more Web 2 developers. And that's another reason that we chose Python is how do we give developers a kind of a stepping off point from their old world? Because a lot of Web 2 devs, they're very comfortable getting paid $200,000-$300,000 a year doing their jobs. There's no incentive. The opportunity cost is too high for them to go learn Solidity and start developing in the Web 3 world. This gives them, you know, a little bit extra incentive to, hey, on the weekends, now I can just mess around. I know Python. I'm a very experienced Python developer. Now I can start to kind of see what this Web 3 world is about.
Wow. Yeah. That's really exciting stuff. So bringing up the, you brought up the bull run a little bit there. So as the head of token relations, can you give us a little idea on your tokenomics? You know, what the current tokenomics, what the plans, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So this is, you know, we do everything a little bit different and Saga Coin is no exception. We actually, our senior economic advisor, his name is Lawrence White. He's a professor of economics at George Mason, got his PhD from UCLA, back in the 80s. One of the most kind of famous economists that is, you know, traveling to crypto conferences and speaking about kind of the monetary policies of cryptocurrencies and what cryptocurrencies will allow us to do. Fun fact, he was actually on the original Cypherpunks mailing list. Hal and Nick Szabo and them were reaching out to him to get advice on, you know, how can we create a digital currency? And that's what we like to say, you know, Larry kind of advised and gave some advice on Bitcoin and the early cryptocurrencies in terms of what a digital currency would look like. We actually brought him in and first of all gave him the technology and the architecture to be able to kind of create his own monetary policy and then kind of, you know, let him take it and run with it. Him and David Beaverman, you know, we've had this. Our goal is to become a medium of exchange. You know, we will one day trade like a Forex compared to a crypto asset, where we actually are the value of the coin is based on the actual economy of the chain. And, you know, that's one of the big reasons we are targeting enterprise so heavily. We're not a permission chain by all. Everyone is free to use us because we've built the platform that can scale to all. But getting in those enterprises is essential not only to adoption of blockchain technology overall, but to be able to create a big enough economy on chain that you can actually run a monetary policy. You know, we have a dynamic supply of coin that is based off of the transactions on chain, you know, so we will, after kind of a period of appreciating the purchasing power of the coin, we will get to a point where it stabilizes out and compared to all other fiat currencies, we'll have a zero inflation, zero deflation rate. So at a certain point, about 7 to 8 years, this turns out to be a great little store of value because keep hold your money in SagaCoin, transfer it out to a fiat whenever you need it, you're making whatever the inflation rate is. In America right now, you know, that's around 6% that you're making on your money per year, just holding it in your wallet. So that's really right. What, you know, we have enough coins out there that are speculative assets. You know, we have the meme coins. We have Bitcoin as a store of value. But we don't have, and that's the one thing about stable coins. Stable coins are still subject to inflation. In order to create a currency that operates outside of all governments, you have to be able to run off your own economy. And that's really what we see and what the goal is to create that global medium of exchange.
I think that's absolutely amazing. That's I think what, I mean, obviously it's just what makes you guys 100% different. All the tech and everything makes you different, but that right there is a really, really cool thing. And I think people, when they first hear that, they say, well, I don't want to buy a stable coin, you know, but what you're doing is so different from that, because you're basing it on your own economy. It has the opportunity to grow, against fiats, but still maintain its own value. But no, I think that's an absolutely amazing idea.
I think one point to add, like you were saying there, to really take it to the furthest step is, and this is it, it's not us that's creating this, it's the community, right? If you guys want to have a true global method of exchange, you have a roadmap to do that now. Get transactions put on it, get sales on it. Let's build this economy, your economy, not ours, right? This is decentralized, open, permissionless, everything like that. But that's exactly what it is. How much effort now does the does the world put forth towards something that allows them to be secure in knowing that my gallon of milk is always going to be this much, won't change, this many Saga coin for a gallon of milk, period, right? Regardless of where it is on an exchange market, that's outside of what this is. So let's grow the economy. It is a global effort. This isn't just, here's a mem coin, I'm going to come in, a bunch of people adding coin. One of the things I still don't get is total value locked. Because if you have 80% of your coin locked, how do you use it for a method of exchange, right? It just, so you know, the idea here has always been to end up at a place to have a coin that you use to buy crypto with. And that's really what this is. So how do you get to a crypto that you can use to buy crypto with, or any other thing, a Coke, stocks, anything, doesn't matter.
I love it. Very, very cool.
Jacob, just very quickly, what is transpiring now? So from, what are we, in November, right? What happens now with Testnet? How long will that take? And what can the community expect the TGE price to be?
Yeah, so in terms of kind of Testnet, you know, we are, again, with software development, you never know. We're finally in kind of the testing and debugging phase of our final phase of private testnet. Once that is all done, then we will, you know, we'll be running it, continuing to test it. We'll have that viewer available. And then it's really getting to public testnet. Our aim for public testnet is the end of this year. It really just depends on, you know, how long the testing takes, and then how long it takes to get the final pieces of the consensus finished that will give us the full dynamic consensus, being able to switch accounts between shards, spin shards up, take them down, such like that. Once we get to public testnet, you know, we're expecting anywhere from a month to 3 months in terms of testing, but we will also be able to kind of get to an area. Talking to our CTO, you know, we'll be able to be listable before we get to the, you know, have the full capabilities of the chain, so that we, you know, don't miss out on that bull market and that bull run. So that's kind of where we are in terms of kind of development with the testnets and stuff like that. And again, that public testnet is when Node operators will start actually producing coin and running consensus and earning those early testnet rewards. And, you know, having some of those applications come on and start to run their testnet environments to give the community some sort of ecosystem to begin and go to explore and play with a little bit. In terms of TGE price, you know, that's really up to the market maker. We have assigned agreements with the market maker. We're not allowed to disclose make an announcement about it, unfortunately, because of a good old Gary Gensler over here in the U.S. with the SEC.
Yeah.
But we do so. We're planning our public sale price at a penny a coin. So that's, you know, based off the first 3 days trading, we would be very happy. We're hoping to come out maybe 2 to 3 cents at listing. And then, you know, really build from there, you know, continue to, and have that sustainable growth, you know, and that's the thing. Everyone in this industry, that they love 1,000X, they love 1,000X, but they also forget what goes up must come down in this industry. And unless you have every single one of those buyers in that 1,000X, you know, doesn't need money and doesn't want to take profits, it's going to come back down at some point. And so that's why, you know, in the appreciation phase of our monetary policy, we have targets of what we want to hit, you know, based off a 30% growth in kind of transaction demand on the chain per quarter, and then targeting a 20% growth over the inflation metrics such as CPI, GDPR, and PCE. So that's really where it is. You know, we want sustainable growth. We want this to run like a business. You know, we have a revenue model built in where we will be taking what we will call a foundation fee from each of the transaction fees. And, you know, that's why we need those high volumes of transactions. We need those supply chains for, you know, the sustainability of the project, but also to become one of those few crypto projects that have revenue, you know, that aren't just having to sell token whenever they need it out of their war chest.
Yeah. And I think to that point, that's one of the biggest things that I've tried to focus on here is how do we create a sustainable go forward ecosystem, right? Mm. I have been looking, and if somebody can help me out, I'd really like to have information on it. How are these, what is the revenue being generated for these layer one chains? Is their entire is their entire focus on or it be able to pay operating expenses and such by having whatever's in the TGE at first and then selling that throughout? You know, one of the things that we focus on is having a very low transaction fee and then charging a foundation fee on that transaction fee, not selling a bunch of coin randomly out of the treasury to do it. And that gives us a sustainable ecosystem, right? If we get to, and our goal is over a 7.5 year period to go from, then, you know, the way that we adjusted, the way that we, you know, started it, it just say we have one transaction per second on the chain in the beginning. By month, by quarter 30, we want to be at we want to have a 4,000 transaction per second average. We can do 4,000 per second. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking to have 4,000 transactions a second running all the time on the chain. Now, is that aggressive? Yeah, it's a 33x increase in current transactions. 4,000 is about 139 billion transactions a year. Right now, I think the entire blockchain industry, as far as, and I'm not sure about how Hedera fits in with some of the things they do, because they say that Abbott Denison or something. I can't remember the name right now off the top of my head, but they do like 2,000 transactions per second or something there. That's not accounted for in what I see as far as the blockchain goes. But if there are 10 billion transactions per second now, we have to be at 130 in order to do that. But that gives us a sustainable way. That means that at that rate, at a quarter of a penny, all node operators would be in cash flow positive annually. Very small margin, right? But you would have a margin. Everything would be passive income. and each node. So if you have more nodes, you get more passive income on there. But that's really the goal here, to be able to, for the node operators to establish a business based on the transaction fee volume, and the rewards are just, you know, icing on the cake, right? And that's really what we're going on. I just don't see, I've been looking, I've looked through the financials of like Ethereum and such like that, that they post, but there's nothing there that distinguishes here is the revenue, but where does that revenue go to? Because they're still selling ETH out of the treasury every once in a while in order to have capital.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't know if anybody in this industry has taken an approach. You still have to, I mean, there's still business approaches that just like computer law that can't be changed. You got to sell something for more than you paid for it if you want to be stay in business, right?
Right.
You have to have a sustainable stream. You can't have a set pool and hope for that to last forever, especially when you have such volatility in price. You know, one day I read the other day that I think Ethereum has 1.3 billion in Ethereum sitting in the treasury or something. Well, that wasn't what it was 2 months ago when it was eight, or 6 months ago when it was 800, right? It was half of that. So that's the problem. How do you sustain a global organization without having this, without having a true revenue model for that?
Right.
And I don't understand that a lot of the big VCs and such seem to have forgotten all about how businesses run or something, because they right. pump billions into these things.
No, I think that's amazing, because, you know, bringing real world business economics into crypto is something that, that's definitely not something we've seen. So I think for future sustainability, I think that is an absolute key. But so with that in mind, where do you see Prasaga? Like, what's your dream for Prasaga 10 years out?
Well, for us to not have any involvement whatsoever in the management of the chain, that it's just fully community owned, that everything is turned over. David and I will always be part of the board in terms of, you know, for philanthropic and such like that. But to have the DAO fully operating, have the, and you know, that's another area that we have to, how do we work on this? How do we work on having more community involvement in the voting? Right. When we went to Switzerland, they asked, you know, well, what's your governance like? And I asked them, what's your governance like? And they said, well, we put forth proposals, and unless we have a majority vote, we don't enact the whatever that policy is. And I said, well, then we're digital Switzerland, because that's exactly how it is. We'll put forth recommendations. There's got to be boards that will take proposals and put forth what is the best proposal for the community, but they can't enact that. They can't implement that until the community votes. And I want it to the point where here's why we want to do this and what the benefit would be as one choice. And the other choice is no. And that's what the community, make it as simple as possible for the community. Because I think Ethereum right now only gets 16% of the community actually votes as far as participation. I mean, here in the US, what do we maybe have 50%, 51% vote participation in the last one? That's the first time it's been that high in ages, right?
Right.
I mean, they've got us so bogged down on things that we forget to do. We can't focus on that. So how do you make life simpler? And I think that's one of the biggest things about this chain that we're trying to do is, okay, all that tech we put out that was supposed to simplify our lives really just complicated them more, right? And so how do we now, is there a way that we can make that tech more usable and to actually simplify life? And that's, there's a lot of things that are done right now that could be automated, as long as there's strict and guidelines and rules in order for that automation to be accomplished. And I think the blockchain does that, because it doesn't do this unless it's given absolute, yes, this is what you can do. You can't do anything else. This is what this allows you to do, kind of thing, right?
Yeah, right.
All right, guys. So as you can see, that there is a lot of information that we've just come through. And every time we have these meetings, myself and Ryan are like jaw dropped because we learn something new and it shapes the way we understand the market. Because we're going out and researching other projects and then we're coming back to Prasaga and they're telling us what's happening here. And it kind of just like, yes, those are the problems that we're facing, but no one seems to be solving them, right? And now they are solving them, and now we have this excitement. So, you know, part of our community is that we want to onboard as many people into crypto as possible. You know, that's one of our fortes in DazGone Crypto. That's why we started the podcast, right? And we've started DadSacks. So the last couple of weeks, we've been, you know, telling you guys what's happening with the DadSacks and, you know, why we're doing it. And we want to take our audience on a journey into the Prasaga world and teach them and educate them on these little things, all right? Perhaps you want to be a builder in the space, right? Myself and Ryan are builders in the space, and there's a lot of pain points, right? And we're learning as we're going. But if there's easier tools that we can use to help us, you know, accelerate, you know, we'll jump ship immediately, you know? So it's finding out these projects that can assist and help. So if you're wanting to build, you know, get on the educational platform and say, all right, how do I learn more about Prasaga? If I've got perhaps a friend that wants to build, you know, and refer back to it, we can incentivize you guys throughout this journey of this educational journey, as well as this referral journey in the space, and reward you guys with something awesome. And Jacob, if you don't mind just announcing, you know, what is happening in the next couple of weeks with Prasaga and DazGone Crypto?
Yeah, so we're donating a bag or a dad sack of 1,000,000 Saga coin in order to, you know, really get the community excited about the project, you know, get people in, give them a little bit of some coins. So, you know, it might be able to make a difference in their life too, and they can really feel like they're a part of the ecosystem. So we will be giving 1,000,000 Saga coin, as well as, you know, some little drops here and there for some random little activities and such. But super excited to be able to start this partnership, you know, and really that's what we're all about. You know, we want to get Saga coin in as many hands as possible. And this is a kind of a great opportunity, not only to do that, but also, you know, give people the education that they need, not only on Prasaga, but getting into this Web3 ecosystem in a whole. You know, it's a I've been following this space since 2016. You know, in college, it was my life, and it still took me about 3-4 years before I really grasped everything. Or, you know, even before you just know the acronyms that everyone throws around in the space. So it's we're very excited to be able to, you know, have this opportunity to not only educate people, but also give them a little bit of Saga coin along the way as well.
We're super excited to have you as our first DadSacks partner. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun through this next year or
1,000,000 Prasaga
bull market.
Guys, we're very excited to this.
Yeah. You gotta go
1,000,000 Prasaga. All right, Ryan, you're mini me. Go. You're gonna go smaller shoulders.
Too late.
Too late. Damn it. All right, we'll work on that. Guys, we're excited about the journey ahead, and our community is gonna be super excited. And yeah, this starts the journey of, you know, the Prasaga partnership, and we're going to keep you updated, you know, monthly on what's happening with the SACs, what's happening with development news updates. And then we've got this whole gamification part, which we will be releasing the next week, where you guys will go on this little journey with us. We can't tell you exactly what's happening because it's going to unravel as you go along. And if you search and hit certain metrics, you get rewarded. And there's a leaderboard and everything. So we'll keep you guys up to date on that.
Nice.
In the last little bit, Michael, what are your final comments for the show?
You know, we've spent the last 6 years in creating this and getting to a point, understanding, you know, where the real pitfalls kind of were. And we took our time doing this. You know, I got to say a year of it is gone because of coronavirus, right? So we would have probably been done last year with this whole thing. But that kind of gave us, as with everybody else, a stopper there. We took a journey that was different from others. Instead of raising hundreds of millions and then going to see if we could build what we said we did, we went ahead and built, understood that we could do it, and then started to bring in participation, right? In order to start to get Saga Coin distributed out there, right? At least the notion that you're going to get it as soon as it mints. So we would just love for people to come and take a look at this. We are looking for projects to build. This is, and contributions into the code base it would be wonderful, right? Let's build this global, it's a global tree, but just this global base of code that will mitigate things like bugs and malicious code and such. And let's stop worrying as much as we can, stop worrying about the bad aspects of this and really just try to make something that works for everyone here. We just built the code. We're putting this platform out there. It's up to everybody else in order to help make it work, right? Give it to the community. That's what open source is. So I'm really excited about the future. We've got some other announcements that'll be coming up over the next few months, really related to going into the IoT side. And everybody's like, how are you going to drive demand? Well, we have a very, very high performance Internet of Things message bus that'll have data running over it that will be part of the open source stack of that we have out there. And that's one way to really get drive demand. If you have devices sending data, paying transaction fees in order to secure that data, immutable, make it immutable and such, well, that's where demand is driven from. NFTs, please, would love to see them on there. There's just not a lot of activity in trading there, right? Not a lot of high velocity. One of the things that we did look for, and we're trying to build our community more, CEXs, they basically look at, how much transaction velocity are we going to get, or volume are we going to get per day? And they usually equate it to about 100,000 across all your socials, means about 10 million. And that's really their baseline for starting, right? That's when they'll bring a project on, when they can know that they'll try to get about 10 million a day in transaction volume. So we're somewhere around, what, Jake, 70,000 across right now. So we do have to build that community more so that we'll get better eyes from better tier ones. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of the things. Guys, there really is something very incredible here. Take the time to look at it and stop just maxing out on something because your coin's there. Great. Keep your coin there. I don't want you to sell your soul. I don't want you to sell your Bitcoin or your Ethereum or anything. And I want you to come over here and participate in this. Let's build something different.
Very absolutely. Cool. That's, yeah. Jacob, any final thoughts from you?
You know, thank you guys for having us on and listening to us blabber for the last hour or so.
Hey, we appreciate it.
But you know, he's really covered it. We're very close now. We're getting ready to show the world what we've built and what Saga Chain will be able to do. And we believe it will be, you know, an evolutionary step in blockchain technology. It will be something that will, you know, finally allow the industry to really start to explode and start to kind of poke its head into different industries and start to take over the old world of things, you know? So we're extremely excited. You know, we've been doing this for quite a while now. And we're getting, you know, we can smell the finish line now. So again, anyone, please come take a look at us. Join the Telegram, ask questions. We love to see your pretty faces in there, or at least your pretty profile pictures. and would love to get some conversation going as well.
Very cool.
Fantastic.
All right, guys. So that kind of concludes the end of our show. And, you know, in listening to these guys, you know, you can't help but get inspired. And I think Jacob mentioned, you know, there's some unorthodox people building on Prasaga. I think it was Pet Adopt. So I'm looking for a Python developer. I'm thinking of maybe a new system of Wife Adopt, you know, track where they've been, making sure that they are first class. No, I'm just joking.
Watch out, man. They'll reverse that on you and it'll be husband tracker. So no. You know, just keep your mouth shut there, buddy.
All right, I'm betting everyone. Everybody. Guys, thank you very much for coming on. Really appreciate it and sharing your knowledge and expertise. It's always a pleasure to learn from some of the greatest minds in the space. And we appreciate your time.
Beautiful. Really, really enjoy the time that we spend with you guys. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Thank you.
And that wraps up our show, guys. Take care. Ciao.
Peace, guys.
The material and information presented in this recording are for entertainment purposes only. Do not misconstrue what you hear as investment or trading advice. Always do your own research. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed by the guests on this recording are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Dad's Gone Crypto or its hosts.